Max is supported by the following community underwriters. Pika Moose Restaurant on State Route 28 in Big Indian, with farm-to-table cuisine Thursday through Monday. Indoor dining from 4 to 9 p.m. and outdoor dining on the moonlit deck. Takeout till 10. PikaMoose.com or 845-254-6500. 845-254-6500. Home Goods of Margaretville, corner of Main and Bridge Streets in Margaretville, New York. Now carrying spices, flour, jams, mustards, coffee and tea, organic vegetables and fruits, and local eggs, milk, cheese, and baked goods. And, of course, cooking basics and tools of the trade for everyone at home. Home Goods of Margaretville. Open Wednesday through Saturday, 11 to 5, 845-586-4177 or hgom.net. 1053 Main Street Gallery in Fleischmann's, designed as a space to support a vibrant and active artistic community nestled within the Catskill Mountains. 1053 Main Street Gallery is located in the historic, renovated Fleischmann's Telephone Building, open Thursday through Sunday and by appointment. Information about 1053 Main Street Gallery in Fleischmann's and upcoming exhibitions at 1053maingallery.com. West Courtright Center in East Meredith, presenting a summer of music concerts from the American Popular Songbook to a celebration of Latin America, West African soul, rock, and reggae. West Courtright Center, located in a historic landmark church, nestled in a secluded bucolic valley on West Courtright Church Road in East Meredith. Event calendar and ticket information at West Courtright Center, westkc.org, or 607-278-5454.
Hi, I'm Harry. I host the show Wingin' It on WIOX Roxbury, along with Elizabeth, who does her offbeat radio column, EJ's Corner. I love to play with sound, perform my own music, sing, do interviews, and more. Join us alternate Thursdays from 6 to 8 p.m. at WIOX at 91.3 FM, MTC Channel 20, and WIOXradio.org. Winging it on WIOX Roxbury.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and at 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi on smart devices through the Radio FM app, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate. This is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but every third Wednesday for many years now, we've had Mr. Gary Mead, come on and talk about a different Catskills tree from Gary Mead Gallery. So, Gary, how's it going?
Good. How are you, Ry?
I'm good. Good. I'm good. Got away. Got up in the mountain a little bit.
Yeah, that's what you were saying.
Yeah. Perfect weather Sunday into Monday. Low humidity, 50% or so.
Well, that was a good break we had there. That was just beautiful.
It was.
Yeah, you want that kind of weather to last for a week, but it never seems to. But
I've become a fair weather hiker.
Yeah.
You know, I used to hike no matter what, 4th of July weekend, and I would just, I didn't care. It'd be 90 degrees out and going up, you know, these mountains.
Thunderstorms.
Thunderstorms. You'd hear your heart through your freaking temple, you know. And I hate humidity. And I remember, like, after doing that for several years, I was like, you know, I don't have to do this. Like, I could do this in August or September.
Yeah.
It took me years to figure that one out.
Yeah.
You know?
But, yeah, that was a perfect day to be out, and that night must have been nice. It was nice and cool and nice to sleep. And
yeah.
Yeah. Usually I open my whole house up in the at night. You know, I usually get home around 8, 9 o'clock from the mill, and I'll open all the windows because I close everything during in the morning when I get up and put towels and the shades are down. And I come in at lunchtime, usually around 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I have my lunch, and I walk in the house, and it feels like an air conditioner in there.
Yeah.
But when it's humid like this, when the temperature doesn't change at night from the day that much, it's just like...
Doesn't matter.
Your humidity is in there, and you're just not getting rid of it.
Yeah. But
there's only a few days in the summer that happens, so, I mean, a few more this year than normally, but...
Yeah, I mean, even Sunday to Monday... It was pretty cool and low humidity, but I swear throughout the night I could feel it.
You could feel it
get warmer.
Back.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I went to take a leak over the cliff, and I'm looking over the whole Hudson Valley and
marking
everything.
Your
I can, yeah, I could see the Kingston Rhinecliff Bridge and everything. And I'm like, you know, it's getting a little warmer or something.
It's coming back.
Yeah, last year it was cold. When I went in September, it was probably in the low 40s at night.
Yeah,
and windy. That was cold.
Yeah, we had the end of the summer, early fall last year was extremely cold. And I remember before Halloween, we had a night that went down into the teens.
Yeah.
And that killed our apple crop. I hope that don't happen this year. But, you know, we had a fair amount of apples last year till that happened. And when I went out picking, because I pick wild apples, and when I went out to pick, I would see trees off in the distance of looked like they were loaded, and you know, I'd knock on the door and get permission to go get them, and I'd drive out there and climb the tree, and because I always test them before I pick them, and you know, you go to pick one and it just squishes up in your hand, and, you know, they got froze and then they turned right to mush.
Yeah.
And I go, oh my god, I struggled last year. I traveled over 100 miles to get enough apples to make about 27 gallons, and I normally do 100 gallons a year. But
Jesus, it's a lot, Gary. You know what I noticed looking over the mountain, though, and I don't know if it's still from... I know we had some haze a couple weeks ago from those fires, but it was still hazy.
Well, the fire's still burning.
So, yeah, it's hazy. I mean, it was low humidity, but the mountains are very, very hazy, looking out towards the Hudson Highlands and stuff like that.
I don't get how they can... just keep burning the planet down like that. I don't understand it. But anyway, that's what it is. We're approaching 200,000 acres burned.
Yeah. Well, it was a long time coming. And if you want to learn about that, we had New Jersey forester Bob Williams on a few weeks ago and talked about the forest fires. And from a forester's perspective, why we think there's a lot of fires going on. But
yeah.
The humble forester's perspective. You don't hear it. You're not going to hear it in the media.
No, the media.
Not a very influential, politically powerful group, our foresters.
Yeah.
Let's just say that. Doesn't mean they're wrong, though.
No.
But in any case, I digress. Tonight's topic is larch or tamarack. I like tamarack better. Larch sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Larch.
Larch.
I don't know.
And it's a beautiful tree. And
yeah,
it's not native.
Well, it is.
It is native.
It is native, but very rare. And it's more native to the northern portion of North America.
Oh, I thought it was brought in from Germany. Actually.
Well, there's European larch, there's Japanese larch, and then there's American larch. And the only native stand in the Catskills, as Dr. Michael Kudish pointed out, who wrote the book The Catskill Forest, A History, is actually right where I live. In the town of Isle, there's a huge swamp. And I actually know the member who owns this swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down there. And it's the only place that I know of, besides there's one place maybe in Pine Bush. I can't remember. But anyway, it doesn't matter. There's black spruce and larch growing next to each other in this swamp.
Two very unusual
Very
species.
Unusual.
Yeah.
They're boreal remnants.
Yeah.
From the glaciers, you know. A legacy from that time period, I guess.
It's amazing.
And there they are.
Yeah.
Growing terribly. It's a swamp. I mean, yep. They got, like, no crowns on them. They look like toothpicks.
Yep.
But they're alive, and they are native.
No kidding.
Amazing.
I wonder what the wood looks like, because I'm sure that, you know, I have American. What they come from, it might be the European. I don't know how to tell the difference.
We'll talk a little bit about it later on, but yeah.
The wood looks like cherry.
Does it?
It's very red, and it has a white sapwood, and, you know, I had my Frankie Flax called me 3 or 4 years ago, and he's putting an addition on his garage. He said, I just tipped over a bunch of larch in the back of my shop. I'm putting an addition on. Said, I didn't know what to do with the logs. Nobody wants to burn them. And he said, I wonder if you want them. I said, I ran up there, and I looked at him. I said, I'll limb them up and cut them the log lengths. And I just got to figure how to get them down to the mill. He said, I'll run them down. As soon as you get them cut up, I'll throw them on and come down and dump them. And I saw them, I don't know, 6-7 months ago. Left them on sticks for a while. But when they're sitting there stickered in the pile, you know, people that know wood well would be walking by the pile and go, well, that's some nice-looking cherry you got. And oh, yeah. I said, well, read the fine print, because I write on everything, the date, sod, and everything in black magic marker, and I wrote larch from Frankie Flax's in Arkville. And so, anyway, it's larch, and it's. I pulled a piece out, because I just finished drying it a week or so ago, and I pulled it off sticks yesterday, and I saved one piece to plane down in the mill and just put it in the gallery so I can have a piece of larch there and show people what tamarack looks like. See,
turmeric.
I always call it turmeric. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
It's about the same color. Turmeric is orange and, you know, tamarack is reddish. But anyway, it's a beautiful tree and it loses its needles in the winter.
It's a very strange tree, and we get calls about it. Not as much as we used to at the Catskill Forest Association, but we used to get calls, and it would, you know, it's funny.
Because they thought it was dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is understandable. I mean,
it is.
Who the hell would know that there's a deciduous conifer?
Yeah.
And that's ironic.
It is.
And the only other ones are not native to our area is Dawn Redwood and Bald Cypress. But in the Northeast, as far as I know, larch or tamarack's the only deciduous conifer.
Yeah. And it's, like I say, I saw it, and it's beautiful stuff. I'm going to wall up a wall, and because stuff like that, I don't have enough to really sell it, and I don't even know what I would charge for it. But, you know, I'm building a garage and a house in New Kingston, and I have all these bundles of wood from different mountains that's going in, like, you know, the finished part of it when I get up there. But I figure in my workshop, I'm going to have a, you know, it'll either be a wall or the ceiling in there is going to be tamarack. And it looks like cherry. It's red. It's just got this beautiful red color. And I'm not sure if it changes color over time because I haven't had it long enough to know that. And the only other time I dealt with tamarack was about 15 years ago. This guy on Hubble Hill come to me, and he wanted a post and beam construction house out of tamarack, and he was from Germany, and he was really, so I did a lot of legwork, and I finally found, because he wanted beams that were I know, they were huge. I mean, they were 30 and 40 foot long, and they had to be, you know, 8 or 10 inches by 14. And, I mean, it takes a huge tree to make something like that. Anyway, I was going to anticipate doing a job for him. So I said, you know, I never saw this before. I better investigate before I get in trouble. Because a job, you know, it was like $35,000, $40,000 job. And you don't want to screw something like that up.
No.
So I don't know if I got a book or I went on a computer, but I just started reading about it. And for like a week, all I did after work at night is investigate tamarack. The thing with tamarack is, it's when you first cut it down, it's full of stress. And if you saw it right away, it twists, it'll crack, it'll bow, it goes from end to end bowing, it'll bow, you know, from top to bottom, it'll crack and split and twist. Twist is about the worst part that happens with it. So in this, when all of my studying about it, it said if you cut it in the winter, let it lay for 6 months before you saw it, and it'll de-stress itself. If you cut it in the summer, you got to let it lay for a year. So I went to this guy and I said, you know, of course, everybody's in, you know, hell bent for election, trying to get stuff done, like,
yeah,
you know, just throw money at it and it'll fix itself. But that don't happen, but especially in my world. But anyway, I said, I explained to him, I said, we're going to have to, this was in the fall. I said, you know, we can cut them this winter and, you know, we can start, I'll cut these out in the spring for you. I said, I found an outlet for the logs. And, you know, to find logs that big was just, I mean, it was obnoxious. I made, and finally through a DEC, the DEC is where I found them, on this one mountain that this guy was logging. And, you know, they were bringing, they had them there that big. Because I needed 30, 36-inch diameters to start with on some,
yeah,
of these.
Probably some plantation.
It must have been something like that. But anyway, I told him to wait till, well, he couldn't wait. And I said, well, I'm not doing it. I said, if you don't want to wait, I said, you know, this is liable on me. I mean, I'm not going to have you sign a waiver because I will not do stuff wrong. I know it's wrong, and just because you want it now doesn't mean I'm going to give it to you now. I said, somebody else will probably do it for you. I gave him a bunch of sawmills. I could call these guys, see if they'll help you out, but I'm, yeah, not doing it.
Right.
The only way I'll do it is the way that I just learned how to do it. And because I remember when, you know, the floor of the Catskill Forest in, yeah, the kitchen is...
And where you walk in, downstairs.
Tamarack.
Yep.
And I think Mike Porter cut that.
No,
was Jake Rosa.
Yeah.
So he cut it down. He cut the log and sawed it, like, immediately. Brought it to me, and I dried it. It came out of the kiln. It looked like, what the hell are we ever going to do with that? There's no way we can use that. It was twisted and warped, and it was just, it was a mess. So I didn't have I have a little shaper. So what I did is I brought it over. I called Matt Hofer, and I had some wormy maple, and I had some pine, and I had some stuff. And he had a molder over there at the time. He don't do mold work anymore, but he has a molder. But he said, you know, I had about 5,000-6,000 board feet I needed to put through. So I put the tamarack in there, and when it came back, his machine was so powerful, and the hold downs that was cut so perfect, it was amazing. Yeah. I mean, when it come out of the other end, it went back to being twisted and all this, but the joins, the tongue and the groove were exactly, and Neil Pecoral, I remember, yeah, he installed that, and, you know, when he come down the mill to pick it up, he looks at it, he goes, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with this, and I said, well, actually, it's very flexible. And I said, I watched it go through the molder, and it like when it went through the cutters, it was flat, but it come out, and it, so I said, you know, the joins are cut exactly perfect, so if you can get that tongue and groove to match up, and I said, the only thing I would suggest is, cut it into shorter pieces. You know, make a 12-footer, a 6-footer, make a 10-footer, 2.5s, and whatever. And I said, that'll help you out because that'll take some of the stress out. And but anyway, that's with a floor is one thing. But, you know, if you're doing somebody's house and those beams are, they're not, they're whatever. But,
if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest, and tonight's topic is larch with Gary Mead.
But that.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is larch with Gary Mead. We talk to Gary every third Wednesday. So, the larch, or tamarack, this is in the pine family. It's about 60 feet tall, and it's a straight-growing tree. You know, that straight, slender trunk and narrow, open, that pyramidal crown. And the branches are kind of whorled, kind of like white pine. And they get these distinctive short spur shoots on two-year-old branches. And once you see those, you can kind of identify a larch or a tamarack tree from far away. But
and they're bright green, right?
Yeah. The deciduous needles, and they're produced in clusters on short shoots, and the needles do turn yellow in the fall, so they do have some kind of foliage.
And they fall off.
Yeah, they fall off. They are not dying.
But they have a pine cone kind of like a hemlock. It's a little bigger,
though, I think.
Yeah, it's a little fat. It's not big as a red pine, but it's...
Yeah, hemlock's got the smallest cone out of any evergreen tree, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Tiny little guy.
Yeah, up to camp, we use them for trim because we put brackets up for shelves. And I usually put, like, a mushroom button in there. And, of course, I didn't have any up there. And we... I got the idea when I was at my house. I have some... by the house, and I just went and picked up a cord of them. We went up there, and we just stuck a little glue in the hole and stuck those little hemlock cones in there, and they're pretty sweet looking.
Yeah, no kidding.
Just matches the camp theme for sure. But yeah, and if you're... There's some really beautiful ones that you can see up close and personal, right? At Goaty White's on the hill there. I was told that, because he has some by just above the, right between him and 28, and there's a whole bunch of them on the bank, and then they go up the bank across the road. But somebody told me that the years ago, maybe 100 years ago, somebody planted tamarack up on that hill. It was a farm. And this was on where Goaty White's is. That was part of that farm, I guess, because it extends all the way down. But there's a whole vein of them, you know, that go right up into past Spillion and up to that neck of the woods.
Yeah, most are planted. A lot of trees, most trees you see out there, over 95% are not planted. But these are spruce, same thing, Norway spruce, red pine, Scotch pine, and tamarack or larch. The government paid a lot of people to plant these trees too. Civilian Conservation Corps of the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And more recently, probably in the 60s and 70s, as farms were abandoned, dairy farms back then.
Well, we used to plant 10,000 a summer. Me, my two brothers, and Fred and Bert and Lansley. The neighbors, they bought the old farms, and I mean, the trees were just donated. But the people had to, like the property owners had to pay somebody to plant them, but they got the trees free.
Hmm.
And we put them up, I mean, we used to, in one summer, we'd put 10,000 trees in. We planted mostly spruce. We didn't plant, there was one stand of tamarack over on Marshall's. We didn't plant them. I think Marshall planted them himself, but I think he only planted like 500 or so, just a little bush. But they do re-sprout and start little trees. Because the old house I was, the old farmhouse where I was raised, there's two of them. Well, one of them's gone, but there was still one down by the cellar. When the barn burnt, that one that killed it. But, I mean, these were 30, 36 inch diameter, and they weren't real tall, and they had, I don't know if they were pruned when they were planted there because they were so close to the building or what, or kids climbed them, broke top out or the limb off, but you know, they were stocky. They weren't real tall, but they were very, I mean, 30, 36 inch diameter, and I think the one is still there. I haven't been up there to the house in years, but I think the one is still there because the guys that bought the property were complaining about there was a honeybees in the one by the cellar, and they're always having a problem with bear coming around, and you know, they were scared. So I don't know if they had somebody come and pull them out, the bees, to get rid of the bear or what the deal was, but you know, I never cared for them much, so I don't go and visit them.
No.
So,
oh, yeah.
So that's the name of that tune. But anyway, I have property across from on the other road that I'm building on. And actually, the view from my house is going to be my old house I was raised in.
No kidding.
Which is pretty cool. But, you know, it just kind of, it's kind of almost disheartening. They always invite me into the house, and I said, I don't want to see it as it is. I want to remember it as it was.
Right.
And, you know, I go and I have coffee on the porch with them and stuff.
It's a big house.
It's a huge house.
Yeah, it's huge.
And the attic is sensational. It's like a whole other apartment up there.
Yeah.
It's all open and cathedral ceilings. We had parties. I mean, my parents had parties up there where, you know, we had dances and all that stuff. And it was, but it's a beautiful house. But I don't know what they did with it. I really don't want it.
Who built it?
Who built it? I don't know. It was built in 1904.
Yeah.
And the farmers there, the Cowans and the Sanfords, built it. When we first moved there, there were remnants of the original house. Because what they did is they took the old house. It took them a year and a half or 2 years or whatever to move this thing maybe 50 or 100 feet away from where they were. They just moved it off the foundation.
Where that spring was, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
They just moved it up onto the side. When we moved there, it was still up. And we used to play in that the old house. But 1904 is when this was built. So they moved it with oxen and horses and all that on pipes and whatever. And it was full of, you know, we never kept any of them, but it was full of bundles and bundles of dowels and... There was old glass in there, but my uncles come over one weekend and they took bulldozers and threw chains and stuff around and pulled it down on the ground, so they're afraid one of us kids were going to get hurt in it. But after they did that, we went in, climbed in anyway. We got our foot stuck and stepped on nails, so we got hurt anyway. So,
right.
But we didn't get killed. But back to tamarack.
Yeah, the uses. What are the wood products made from tamarack, do you know?
From what I read in Germany, turpentine is made from a tamarack. That's every fall at the base of the tree, it doesn't go into the roots. It stores it at the base of the tree. And this is 15, 20 years ago since I read, I didn't... but when I learned this back then, they have forests over there they grow just for the turpentine. And once they take that sticky, because I think they can dilute it 100 to 1 once they get that sticky, it's like a pitch. And it's like a pine pitch. It's really sticky, and it kind of smells like turpentine. But anyway, when they harvest this, those forests, they don't use for lumber. Because once they do that, it lessens the strength of the outdoor use. Because instead of pressure treated over there, they use tamarack. And they sink them right in the ground, and it doesn't rot. I mean, it lasts years and years. And, you know, this stuff I just dried, I could not believe the pitch that dripped out of these pieces.
Really?
It was just, yeah. There were puddles, you know, on each row from the row above it.
Well, that's what I found, is that the slower growing trees I was reading are apparently higher in resin, and this makes them, they claim, more likely to be decay resistant.
Yep.
So, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I wouldn't know, though, how much pitch. I never cut down a larch, to be honest.
Well, I sawed and dried them, and I mean, it saws nice, and
yeah.
The only other, the one that I saw actually more pitch than the larch, I mean, the pine a little drips out. You don't see any pitch in hemlock. The red pine and actually Scotch pine is very heavy in a sap. Pitch.
Pitch pine is Pinus, yeah. Pinus rigida, which you probably, I don't know if you've ever come across, to be honest.
I think is that the same as, oh God, what's that old pine? God, I lost it.
It's its own tree. It's the only one of the pine trees that has 3 needles per fascicle. And you find it, dwarf pitch pine grows on like the Shangham Ridge, you know, after a fire.
Yeah.
But if they're growing in a good site, they can get, you know, 50, 60 feet tall.
Yeah. Well, a lot of old buildings are made out of pitch pine.
Are you talking about maybe hard pine or yellow? Southern pine.
Heart pine.
Southern yellow, yeah.
And because
that's down south.
That has a lot of pitch in it. They did I was working for Ron Sawyer, drawing. He sent me up some stuff because they took a building down in New York, and it was heart pine, and he sawed it into lumber and sent it to me, and that was 120 or 30 year old lumber.
Jeez.
That was in beams, and when I dried it, the pitch just, I mean, there were puddles. That was the most pitch I ever seen in that stuff. But, you know, the larch comes a close second to that, and third, I would say, would be Scotch pine.
Well, when you get pine from, say, you might not know this, Lowe's or Home Depot, what pine is it typically? Do you know?
Looks like spruce to me.
Yeah?
It doesn't look
well. Whenever I do sugaring, it's on the back of my behind the evaporator. It gets very hot back there, and pitch never stops coming out. As soon as it heats up, it comes right out of where the nails are. It never has stopped.
Huh?
Just keeps coming out.
Well, spruce don't have. Well, I guess spruce does have pitch in it.
It just keeps coming, man.
Well, the thing about you, I don't understand why it keeps coming. The thing about pitch is. You know, if we crystallize pitch in the kiln, and what that means is, you know, the hardwoods, we can finish them off at about 150 degrees. You can go up to 160 if you want, but, you know, you can completely dry them good. But when we put pine in, I always top it. I run it for 2 days at 165, because what that does is it's called crystallizing the pitch.
Hmm.
So when this pine gets, as long as it doesn't go up to 165, the pitch will be a solid. It won't turn into a liquid unless it gets hotter. So I don't understand why your evaporator gets hotter every year a little bit, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, it's pretty hot back there. I mean, it's not the most efficient evaporator, so there's a lot of heat being lost at the back,
yeah,
where the flue is. And that's where those boards are, because they're around the flue,
mm-hmm,
you know, at a good distance, so, you know, I don't have a fire. But
I never bought wood from Home Depot or Lowe's, so
yeah.
I don't know what they're selling.
Yeah.
I'm just walking by when if I'm heading down to get some bolts and whatever, I go through the wood section just to walk down through there, and, you know, eyeing it up. Looks like all spruce to me. It's very white. I mean, very, very. I mean, there's not much. Pine is more of a yellowish color.
That's what I thought it was, pine.
Well,
more yellowish. But
But who knows? They buy whatever's they can get, and I'm sure there's all kinds of stuff. I laughed at their oak selection they had. They pallet grade oak. Selling for, like, this was before lumber went up. It was like $8.50 a board foot. And my brother bought some, or he was going to buy some, and I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, oak." And I said, "Well, that's pallet lumber. I mean, it's all full of defects and you know, mineral and all this stuff." And I said, "People just don't know what they're looking at." And so I brought him to the mill, and I showed him, you know, this is, you're going to make a piece of furniture. This is what you want here. I mean, you can make furniture out of that too, but don't pay $8.50 a board foot for it. Go to a pallet mill and take a pallet apart.
Yeah.
You know, $3 a pallet, you get all the low-grade wood you want.
Well, in the past, I guess larch was made to make poles, posts, railroad ties, used in rough lumber, fuel wood, boat construction. I've used a sapwood to boil maple sap. It burns hot and fast, so it's good for that. I guess the bark does contain tannins like hemlock, probably not as much, but can be used in leather making. So
it has a beautiful bark.
Yeah.
It's really pretty. It's like a red pine bark almost.
Yeah.
And it's kind of similar to that. And it's a very thin bark. There's not very, you know, like a lot of, like the hardwoods, they got a half inch, an inch thick before you get to the inner bark. Tamarack, yeah, you're going a quarter at best, and you're into the inner bark, and then the sapwood. It's a very thin layer on the outside of tamarack.
Well, I guess that's what makes it susceptible to fires, that thin bark. It will get its butt kicked if there's a good fire.
Mm-hmm.
But habitat where you find this is in boreal forest. That's up north in acidic areas. It's extremely cold hardy, the American larch or tamarack, down to negative 40 degrees. It can also take high water tables or poorly drained areas. Sphagnum bogs is where I have found it in Ulster County, in that swamp. Very acidic, very wet. It's amazing that trees can grow in such a condition, but extremely cold hardy. But it needs plenty of light and water. Otherwise, the crown becomes like a Q-tip in relation to its bowl or trunk, and that's not good. It's unhealthy. Although it's probably good for wood, because if it's grown slowly and the rings are close together, probably stronger.
Yeah.
But that takes a lot of time. So if you're planting, like I always say, every tree likes well-drained sites. But if you have a wet area and you have to plant something in it, I would recommend not doing that. But if you had to plant in a wet area, larch might be the tree.
Might be the choice. Not too wet, but, wetter than you'd want to plant a maple in. But.
Yeah, maples, sugar maple doesn't like it. Red maple, it'll tolerate it.
They age to 150 to 335 years old.
Yeah, well, I mean, that would be really old.
Oldest one ever recorded.
Usually, probably below 100 is where you're probably going to get most trees. You're going to have die back. Just because, you know what happens is these trees were planted in plantations too close together. And most of the time they're dying from lack of sunlight because they're competing with each other. And they all start to die at the same time.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of these plantations, they were just to put people to work or spend money. And unfortunately, they were never thinned. So now 80 years goes by, and you have a whole stand of trees that are just dying all at once. It's too bad. It's a waste.
That's not only a waste, it's a fire hazard. You ever get any kind of fire going in that, you're not stopping it. We haven't had a fire in these mountains for many years, but years ago, they had fires once in a while, but... that's my biggest fear with those, because, in New Kingston, I look up on the mountain and I see all those 20,000-50,000 trees that we planted. And, back when I lived on the farm, like 40 years ago, I used to go up hunting through there 50 years ago, and they were too thick then. That's when they should have been in there cutting and trimming and... I mean, they would have beautiful trees.
Oh, yeah.
Now they have all these things that are dead from 40, 50 feet up, and the tops are a little bit green, and they're just struggling to survive.
Yeah, if they were thin, you can have so much more board foot per acre in a softwood stand.
Yeah.
But they're never thinned.
No.
It's a lot of work to do that, and it takes a lot of forethought.
Yeah.
Well, this is the long range.
Nobody thought of that anyway.
Yeah.
But
if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest, and tonight's topic is larch with Gary Mead.
Creeping round my back stairs. Sometimes I think it's a sin when I feel like I'm winning when I'm losing again.
This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. That's Gordon Lightfoot. Hey, I saw Gordon Lightfoot live in Kingston like 8 years ago.
Really?
He's in his 80s and he's still doing it.
Yeah.
He's on tour right now, I think.
Yeah. Well, when you do something you love, you just don't stop. And people say, when are you going to retire? Why would I want to?
Yeah.
And stop
Amazing.
Having this much fun? Are you kidding me?
I know it. Yeah, that's cool. It's a good thing.
I mean, you know, people have jobs they don't like. Of course, they want to retire, but
yeah.
When you're, you know, I retired from stuff I didn't like as much, so, you know, I'm to the point where, you know, I'm having a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but it's fun. Well, I wanted to read People in Trees tonight. I haven't read this one in a while, and this just my thought on, you know, how people and trees are so much the same. I wrote this back in March in 2015. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. Soils of the earth outstanding, for us both life-sustaining. Sweet, fresh air in the atmosphere, that with trees we also share. Grand yellow ball high in the sky, sharing together, needing sun to survive. Water in the rivers, streams, and the rains, hydrating us both, flowing in our veins. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. Both have roots deep, standing firm, traced back thousands of years, realize both in years of age by calculated scientific measurements. Growth ring and fingerprint patterns look very much the same, each owning their own identity, and no two patterns a perfect match. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. Some may look almost alike, never two exactly the same, like every snowflake or drop of rain, boulder, stone, or grain of sand. We will both get old and die, going back where we started from, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, a very strong force inside both of us. Sometime, while walking by a tree, say to that tree, you are a lot like me, and living for each other every day will secure our bond and harmony. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. And that's my poem for tonight, and I hope you enjoyed it. And about larch again, or tamarack, if I pulled a I'm going to put it in the gallery. I pulled out a board from what I just took off sticks, and I'm going to plane it one side and leave the other side rough. I'm going to put it out in the gallery, and if anybody's interested in seeing how beautiful that wood is, and they actually want to touch it and feel it and see how it, you know, I'll even cut a little piece off the end to take home with you if you want. But, you know, I have a learning center down there. If there's anything you want to know about wood, I'm not an expert by any means, but I do probably know a little bit more about wood than the guy out on the street because I've studied it my whole life, but there, you can never learn all there is to know about it.
That's why I can't stand the term expert.
Yeah, I'm no expert.
I like, you know, I was just talking about this today with a coworker, and it's a practice.
Yeah.
You never, an expert almost assumes that you know everything.
Yep.
And I never want to be considered an expert.
Well, somebody came to the gallery today and said, they told me, made a comment and said, well, you're the best there is. And I said, no, I'm not. I said, I keep practicing. I can get better. I know I can get better, but I'm not the best there is. I mean, that's a crazy comment. And don't say that to me.
Don't say that to me. You leave if you say that again.
That's just it's a rude comment. It really is. Because when you're the best, there's no room for growth. I mean,
yeah.
And an expert, I mean, where's the growth from there? So, you know, I don't pretend to know everything, and I surely as heck don't.
No, the more
I just keep practicing. I do. You know, every time I do something, it's different, and I might get a little bit better. But, you know, it's little tiny increments. And, you know, if you leave it alone for a while, you forget probably more than you would learn if you kept at it. But anyway, I love working with wood, and I love all species and varieties of wood. And I'm very blessed to have this passion. And, you know, it keeps me focused and you know, happy. You know, and I'm probably, I'm going to be busy the next couple of years putting my garage and house up, but it's, and that's stressful. I'm telling you that's not something I'm looking forward to having it done, but I sure as hell ain't looking forward to, you know, doing it. And, you know, with this surge of people in the area that have taken all of my contractors' time up, it makes it even harder.
Yeah.
And all I learned from all this is local don't mean shit anymore.
The bigger
the
fish to feed, huh?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
The bigger wallet gets the bigger, the most attention. And I don't have a bigger wallet, but anyway. But I'll just, I just take deep breaths and it'll happen when it happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, we actually started and, you know, there are a few people that you know, on my side that actually missed
through.
They're helping me out and we're getting through it. So, and good people, and you just can't. I'm blessed. I am very blessed to have them on my team. But you know, some of them let me down, and I still love them. But you know, that's all there is to that. But anyway, and you can't plan too far in advance, but.
It's very busy. There's a lot of people moving up or staying put.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, we don't, before this surge, contractors were months behind, and now they've turned years behind.
Yeah.
So, you know, anybody coming from downstate, you know, bring your tools and your equipment with you. Let's get some craftsmen in the area and excavators and whatnot. We're short on them, so.
But. Yeah, we lose a lot of them, too. It's down south. You know, I've known a lot of people that just pick up and leave.
Well, they've had enough of New York State. And
you know?
If I didn't love New Kingston so much, I'd move out, too. But.
Yeah, we had a guy. We were just talking about him, Neil. He left, and he was a great carpenter. We used to use him at the office all the time.
Oh, and he did good work.
Yeah. I mean,
everything he did was just top.
He's always happy, too.
Yeah, that's what I liked about him. You know,
he's always smiling about something.
Well, like I say, he come to pick that larch up. It was all twisted like a pretzel and warped. And, you know, he's saying, you know, God, how am I going to get this down? I said, well, the tongue and the groove are right where they need to be.
He's always a sarcastic guy.
Yeah.
You know?
What's that?
He's always kind of sarcastic, you know?
Yeah. But he made it, you know, he's always, you know, happy and funny and whatnot. And never looking at the gloomy side. I don't know if never, but, you know, I didn't hang around them all that much. But you can pretty much tell when you spend an hour with somebody what they're like when they're not around you. But anyway, I'm not the best, and I sure as hell ain't no expert. So anyway, but if you want to learn more about wood, then, you know, come to my gallery and see the, you know, I have samples of wood standing up, and I've had a lot more time since the mills closed down to set stuff up so people can enjoy it and learn different species. And I now have tamarack in my arsenal. So.
Not turmeric.
Not turmeric.
And if you go there, tell Gary he's the best that there is.
And you'll be leaving on a rail. Probably a black locust trail.
There's nothing else you can learn. It's all over.
It's all over for you.
The more I learn about the forest, the more I realize I don't know.
Oh, God, it's scary sometimes, isn't it?
You can get lost just in mushrooms, really.
Yeah.
Mushroom people are weird. Yeah, well, they're different. I'm not saying in a bad way. I'm saying they're very special people.
Oh, I'm sure. But I'd like to get out and learn them myself. And that's one of the things when my life slows down a little, I get to New Kingston. I'm going to take time to learn all this, the mushrooms, because I see mushrooms growing all the time. I'm out blackberry picking the other night, and I saw these. They look beautiful. So I had a baggie in my pocket, and I picked them up, and I picked them and put them in. Then I'm picking berries, and I'm thinking, geez, I wonder if they're poisonous. Now I got the poison on my hand. I got to poison my berries. So I dumped them out, and I left them there. And I could have ate them, but you can't do that. There are the ones that can really hurt you.
No, there are mushrooms that can definitely hurt you.
Yeah.
But this weekend, I think it's full already, so I shouldn't even mention it, but there's going to be a ginseng wood walk. That's a cool plant.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing is you every time, what keeps me going with the forest is when you learn something new about it, you just look at the woods a little differently.
Do you collect ginseng?
I don't collect it. If I see it,
you'll pick it?
I'll pick it. But I usually just eat a leaf, I'll be honest with you. But
well, if anybody's picking, because I knew a ginseng guy that picked and, you know, moved or whatever, but what they used to do is they go picking, and there are so many people in the woods picking ginseng that the plants he didn't pick, he'd cut the leaves and put them in a bag.
Yeah.
So that the people couldn't find them.
And I know it.
I used to buy the bags of leaves, and I'd dry them, and I did some research on the leaves, and they're good to eat.
No, they pep you up. They're like coffee times five. But that's all time we have on From the Forest, and we'll see you next week.
Good night, folks. Peace.
Good night.
His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd end up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year. Flowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest.
of the canyon streets and the con men.